Good day. Welcome to ProThink.org Radio Show. This is Mike, and today is March 16th, 2008. We're going to have a great show for you today. We're going to do some catching up here and have Converse on with us today, and I'd like to welcome you right away on the show today, Converse. How you doing?
Wonderful, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. So you got this new forum going on. How's that going for you?
Yeah, man. It's converse.com/PHORUM, forum with a PH. Going pretty well, man. We've got a few contributing members. I'd like to see a lot more traction on it because there's really no forum out there for us. There's a whole bunch of Ron Paul people that got forums, and there's these Alan Watt people that got forums and stuff, but we really don't have one in the Zionist community that's actually about truth. I haven't really seen any good ones, so I figured might as well make one. And I'm trying to make sure everybody gets an equal opportunity to say whatever they want. You can make fun of me, you can say whatever you want. I'm pretty much going to let everything ride, let the truth prevail in every situation. I'm not really interested in censoring nobody unless it's just absolutely necessary. And even then, I'm going to try to, see what the general take is in the rest of the forum. But, I thought it was necessary because nobody has even done it.
So, yeah, rumor has it you're going to have a forum that's not going to ban and censor people. What kind of stuff is this, man?
I don't know, man. I've been on the wrong end of being banned for no reason. People get childish and they have these egos, so they don't like it when somebody questions the authority or the leader. And obviously, that's what this is all about. If I see something wrong with you, I might say that about you. But so far everything's good. But the point of it is, there shouldn't be any leadership, and that's why we try to open up the ideas themselves to see which ones stick and which ones don't. And it's pretty obvious that these other people haven't had, too much success in whatever plans they've had, especially like trying to defeat the system with an actual politician. That's not going to happen, and people have wasted a lot of time and money. I think they spent, 40-some million dollars on Ron Paul. And, a lot of different sort of situations that it just seems like we needed one. So,
yeah, it's it.
Made one.
And again, that's converse.com/forum, spelled with a PH, like phone, ORUM. And you go ahead and register up on there. We've almost got about 100 members on there right now and quite a few active ones, and there's some good topics going on. I think one of the topics on there that's pretty hot right now is the Holocaust discussion topic, and that's been very enlightening. There's a lot of informed people on there and some uninformed ones on some topics, and it's...
Well, that's the whole point, because obviously when we, the people fighting this crime network are global. They come from every background. I mean, there are white people, there are black people, there are, yellow people. Everybody's basically fighting these same criminals, and one of the things that a lot of so-called truth seekers or whatever try to push is that at the very top, they're all mongrelized, like they're all interbred. And that they kind of don't have a race of their own, and they, all work together. But if you look at the political assassinations that have taken place and all these the aristocracy of Europe and stuff, none of that stuff really fits. And so it's important to recognize that that we're all fighting the same group, and that's why we made this forum so everybody can bring in their own input, because I might know something that someone in Australia may not know, especially with regards to their control in America, but maybe somebody in Australia knows something, that I don't know about Australia. So it's important to, get a lot of different perspectives and, let the ideas battle it out, in case of any, opposition, and then see what happens. And that's what we're trying to do with the forum. So in the Holocaust thread, there was a lot of discussion about, perhaps how many people have died, the method of execution or...
Oh, and the importance of the topic in itself of why it's important to discuss something, because there was an argument I even saw being made that it's so long ago it's not important, but it is very important.
Well, it's very important because they've used a victim status. They've created this fake victim status for themselves, so because of that, everybody is just willing to overlook all the other problems with what's going on, because they're like, well... they were harmed, so you can't really talk bad about them. But when you destroy that whole cover of the fact that, that they've created this 6 million myth, there's some evidence to prove that they had something to do with some sort of prophecy they had or some sort of you know, occult relation to why they, you know, use that 6 million, because they tried the 6 million thing in 1919. There was a book written about this, the Holocaust or something. It was the Holocaust that occurred in 1919. I forgot the name of the book, but in 1919 they had an American Hebrew paper, I believe, that pointed out that there were 6 million people, you know, being starved and.
Yeah, they tried to start that propaganda outside of World War I, and it didn't go too far for them, so they had to go with that on World War II. And yeah, so you go to the forum there, and you can see a lot of great evidence and inputs being put on there, and also some debating opinions. Now, I want to bring up a group of people that we've been talking about for quite a while, is the We Are Change group. I noticed recently that We Are Change, headed out by Luke Radowski, confronted Larry Silverstein. And when they did this, I thought to myself, wow, that sure does look like some of my recent past actions with the suits and the question and answer sections.
Wait, what do you mean by that? Do you mean they were wearing suits?
Yeah, they were wearing suits and looking professional, and they actually had... Yeah, and then they actually did it in a format of a question and answer section, which it's like, wow, man, maybe these guys, you know, some of the questions were really soft, and obviously they're still not hitting on the topics, but I got to say, I noticed some influence there, and I was actually a little impressed.
Well, yeah, considering that they wanted to censor you before, it's kind of interesting that they would now take on what you're doing, try to, like, steal your ideas. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, so I give it up to some of them guys for the ideas of looking professional, coming in there, and there was a little heckling going on, but quite frankly, at that point that they did that, it was justified, because they backed Silverstein into a corner on a question that he refused to comment on, and that's, you know, that was at an appropriate time, I thought, that the heckling was justified. But, yeah, it was just the format that was laid out. It was kind of like the format that, you know, I did in the last three videos with Shubat and Sensenbrenner and Feingold, and that's a very productive stance that they took. Now the thing that they need to do is the most important, is actually address the hardcore topics. I would have liked to have seen something being brought up about Frank Lowy to Larry Silverstein, because that guy has never had any light shined on him. It's always been Silverstein alone. And that, you know, that's just some suggestions that could have improved.
Yeah, they were business partners, and they had a whole bunch of things going together.
I recently did an interview with Daryl Bradford Smith by I'm the Witness, and we were talking about the South American thing. And I differ on him on opinion as far as Hugo. I'm looking, you know, he was basically saying that, you know, there isn't any nation leaders honestly trying to fight these people. And, you know, looking at what's going on with the actions of Venezuela and South America and their ties and their friends, it's looking as if there is some resistance to this Zionist mafia. Now, what is your opinion and take on the recent events that transpired in between Colombia, Ecuador, in Venezuela?
Well, I'm just mildly familiar with that, so maybe you could go ahead and give me a synopsis of what exactly occurred, because I'm mildly familiar with what just happened. I've been studying some other issues at the time.
Well, obviously we know Hugo's buddies with Iranian President Ahmadinejad, and we know where he stands on this. And you look at some of the actions recently taken, and I brought this up with DBS too, is his arrest of Jewish subversives in his country, and there was a lot of evidence that there was an exodus of the Jewish community leaving that country, as if they're seeing that this guy is basically stepping on some toes at that point. And then, you know, obviously we tried to proxy a fight between Colombia and them, and it looks to me as if Colombia was getting ready to stand up to them. But, you know, Hugo has been down there financially buying out the debts from all the Zionist-owned central banking systems with his fortune down there, so that they will be under his belt instead of, you know, the Zionists. And they all stood up against the Colombian president in this last summit and basically made him buckle. And that's when he said, okay, you know, basically, that's what I was saying, he's basically told the United States he's not going to be doing their dirty work at this point, but thanks for the $3.3 billion in aid for fighting them. So it's just some analysis is trying to look at and see where everybody's at in this. And
I think a lot of times what happens in Ecuador, people don't understand. Like, they see the communism, they see the socialism, and we all know that all these isms, for the most part, have been created by the same group to, you know, pit one against the other. Communism and capitalism have been used very very well in their, you know, in their ways that they made them fight each other, and they, you know, created these huge military-industrial complexes in both countries, and they were able to create this false dichotomy and false opposition and whatever, and they controlled both, you know, both sides of it. I mean, they had, you know, Wall Street in New York was basically funding the whole Communist Party in Russia and the Soviet Union and everything. So the point of it is people assume that because the South Americans are, you know, using some sort of socialist principles, that they are, you know, that socialism was created by, you know, these people, that they're, you know, with these people. But what I see a lot of times in South American countries, especially with Venezuela, is that a guy like Chavez, I think from what I've read, he's come from pretty much modest means. And, you know, just like in Bolivia, you have, what is that guy's name in Bolivia? Evo Morales, yeah. And so Evo Morales, and you know, came from, he's an indigenous, I think he came from like a farming family or something, you know, very poor peasant type of people. So it's it doesn't really make too much sense that they would, you know, come up, and you can pull themselves up by bootstraps, as it were, and then be actually in league with these people. Now what happens all the time is, running a government, you're running a state, you know, you're trying to figure out the best things for your people. You're not gonna, you know, occupy yourselves with, you know, the grand conspiracy on a global scale. I mean, obviously those things affect every country on the planet because of the control over the world trade and the control over the global economy. But at this time, it seems like Chavez, he's doing what he can for his people. He's trying to, you know, make education basically a right for the general populace. He's trying to do that with what I see. He's going after the really rich families, the aristocracies and stuff, and they're basically usurpation of the natural resources of Venezuela. And Venezuela and all these countries for the last 400 years, South America has been, Latin America has been, you know, taken over, their resources have been taken over by the colonial presences, you know, both covert and overt. And so I think a guy like Chavez is actually, you know, I don't think he's on their side from what I've seen. Obviously, when you get on the world stage, people will say, well, you know, they could kill him anytime they want, but, you know, I feel like, you know, a lot of people, they've tried to kill some people, and some people have, you know, been overthrew. And, like, for instance, they could have killed Ahmadinejad, but they didn't do that. And that doesn't mean Ahmadinejad is on their side just because he's not dead. I mean, we could say that about a lot of people throughout history that, you know, have opposed them, that never got killed. They were just marginalized to the point where, you know, they couldn't be as effective. So Ahmadinejad obviously is on, you know, the side of good from what I've seen. He's opposed them in every single way. You know, that's possible for a leader who's actually, you know, involved in the politics of his own country. And obviously every country is affected by it. They have to deal with their own problems at home before they try to, you know, educate the masses on the world stage.
Not only that, but one of the other topics, too, that Chavez did down there is all of his media is independently Zionist-owned. And the only thing saving him from to be able to speak to the public is they have a state-owned channel that he talks on. And so he's got, you know, another avenue that they have their own state-owned media channel. And
he stuck to his principles pretty well, because he could have easily shut down those, you know, I mean, if he wanted to make it a dictatorship, he could have shut down those other alternative media sources.
Well, he did. This is the point I was getting at, actually, is one of them had bashed him so hard. One of the networks, they were coming up to relicense the network, and he refused to license the network, which, I mean, you could look at it as he censored a network, or you could look at it as, you know, as that was just the right way to do it. I mean, that's basically an opinion base at that point.
Well, obviously, the people that are in power there, the people that have owned land, that have controlled resources, that have exploited indigenous populations and, you know, used their labor and made them basically peasants, I mean, obviously, they're not going to give up power no matter where they are.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter what country they are in. And a guy like Chavez and a guy like Evo Morales, you know, we might judge them on a certain way from, you know, our viewpoint, saying, oh, well, they didn't say this, and and some of them maybe don't say 9/11's inside job, but I mean, you know, it's kind of irrelevant to them because they got their own problems at home and they got to deal with those things, and the people of those countries are in much worse situation, in a much worse situation than we are in America, and we still have a lot. That's why our people aren't mobilizing against the powers. I mean, you know, obviously the New World Order concept is pretty much a popularized concept. I mean, Lou Dobbs talks about it on, you know, primetime television. So it's not something that's totally new to anybody. And for the most part, people generally, I think, have an understanding of, you know, that there is a group of ensconced elites that are taking over and everything. But, you know, it doesn't really matter because people are so comfortable here. They don't really feel any need to, you know, question anything. And until we get uncomfortable, it seems like they're not going to be willing to oppose them. And in countries like there, they've already been exploited, and they're living on, like, meager means. They're, like, living on less than a dollar a day in a lot of places. So they got to deal with their own problems first. So I think South America and the world of Islam basically are the two last remaining kind of roadblocks to a complete, you know, totalitarian one-world government system. And they're doing their part. And I think that the unity between Venezuela and Iran on a lot of issues, especially energy, and I think some agreements to, you know, train the militaries together and stuff like that, I think I've read about. And also, on a larger scale, China and Russia. It's kind of alarming in one way because they're trying to make I think what they're trying to do eventually is have a nuclear war between maybe America and NATO and European countries on the one side, and then, you know, China, Russia, and, you know, the other states that they've got agreements with on the other side, and, you know, basically destroy everybody and then make their own one world government that way after everybody's back is broken. So in that sense, it's kind of scary and alarming. But, you know, in the sense that it's actually helping the people of those countries, like Iran and maybe Venezuela, it's a good thing, at least for now.
Now, we're at the point in time in this ordeal with these people that it's their move. You know, so what do you see, for instance, happening pretty soon here, you know, because the chess pieces are lined up for possibly a checkmate or possibly a backfiring on them. What do you foresee happening here within this year with the economy, with the false flag attack? I mean, it's pretty well known.
One of the things I've noticed is that it's become part of popular culture. Whenever you see something become part of popular culture, you know that it's become innocuous. It's become harmless to them. So one of the things I'm noticing is that the Fed, the abolition of the Fed and, you know, getting rid of the Fed is, like, becoming a popularized issue. This guy named Rogers, I believe, on a mainstream MSNBC news network, he was even advocating that. Ron Paul was advocating that. He was allowed to say whatever he wanted to say about it. And also a guy in the CFR put out a paper that, you know, said that we need to abolish it. So at this point in time, it seems like they're totally willing to do that, and the economy has gotten into such a bad state, and it's going to continue. I mean, it's like we're like in the middle of an avalanche. It's not as far down as it's going to go. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better, and it really can't get better unless the whole system collapses and something else comes out of its place. Because the only thing they're trying to do is put a Band-Aid on a ruptured artery when they infuse more money into the economy. So, generally speaking, getting out of dollars is very important. Completely getting out of it. You know, if you can, it's a lot of homeowners are going to have to pay a lot more. They had adjustable rate mortgages. They're going to have to pay a lot more than they were paying, and a lot of them are losing jobs. People are losing jobs anyway because companies are going to feel the brunt of this too. So one of the things that I would advocate is some people, if they've got enough leverage, they can just stop paying their mortgages. And a lot of times what will happen is, if they're in a, depends on where they're at, but sometimes the banks will just say, all right, just stay in the house and pay for the electricity and we'll let you stay in the house for free. Because the banks have no solution for the houses either. And it's better for them to have someone in the house than, you know, not. So they'll take your money, but if you stop paying it, a lot of times they won't say anything to you. Because I know I had an uncle, and the mortgage started getting too high on him, and, you know, he wasn't making any more money, so he just stopped paying, and he just said, let's see what's going to happen. And eventually they sent him a letter, oh, are you going to pay? And then they, you know, they tried to bully him, and then after he didn't, you know, budge, they just said, all right, you know, just stay in the house, you don't have to pay anything, just pay, you know, the electricity the gas bill and stuff like that. So as much as possible, you know, fix yourself. Don't worry about, you know, those, like, because you're not going to, there's not going to be a huge upturn in the housing market anytime soon at all. So it's not like you're going to find equity in your homes anytime soon. It's not going to make any kind of miraculous bounce back up anytime soon. So whatever you can do for your families, whatever you can do for yourself, do it. Don't worry about those other things, because eventually, you know, there's going to be, I think, a lot of autonomous communities are going to sprout up where people are just going to react to what's going on and try to alleviate the suffering on a mad scale, on a grander scale. And I think what they're trying to do is make this this country into a second world, even eventually a third world country, and, you know, bring up some other countries and make them better, because that's what they do. They hop on a country, they exploit it for its resources, they exploit it for its labor force, and when it fulfills its obligation, they just throw it away like a dirty whore or something.
Now some of the things that we could do if we did have some righteous politicians, and obviously some of these ones out here that people follow so hard haven't said these two very important solutions that we could do at this point. One of the solutions is we could go tell the Fed Reserve to go beat it, and we're not going to pay you back none of your money. We reinstitute a congressional currency, so that basically that $9 trillion or $10 trillion, whatever it's at now, that we supposedly owe these central bankers, we go tell them to screw themselves. You know, hey, we're not going to pay you nothing. We're going to start printing out our own currency. We're going to get our industry built back up. And another thing that would save this country on top of that would be a foreclosure freeze for the next 5 years in all businesses and homes. You know, so that way people can at least sustain at this point. Like I said, they can't pay the bill on the house, but at least the foreclosure would be frozen for 5 years until we rise back up into enough power to do something about it. Now, looking at all the other aspects of this country going downhill, you look at some of the things, like the fact that the people in this country are way, way worse condition than we were when the Great Depression happened. We had a lot of farming, and we had a lot of production-based people back when the Great Depression happened, so we were able to regain this, regained some stability here. Not only that, but we didn't have so-called population of people that were, you know, the morals and the family values back then were a lot stronger. So you had people that...
Yeah, they would stick together through the tough times. They wouldn't just, you know, leave each other because it got tough. It got tough. Nowadays, everybody, you know, wants to break out of the marriage, you know. A lot of times they only get into a marriage just because it's convenient for them economically, and, you know, that's one of the problems. Another issue is that back then, people knew how to take care of themselves. Nobody knows how to grow their own garden, you know, food. They don't know how to do a lot of different things. I mean, if it comes down to it, you might have to hunt some deer down. I mean, you know, those are things that if you can learn how to do that, you can really survive on very little. You don't need too much to survive as an individual. I mean, one deer can feed a family of three for a long time, and, you know, there's still a lot of places where you're completely allowed to go and, you know, hunt your own deer. So people need to find out how to do all these things, because eventually one of the places that's going to suffer is the food industry and everything, and how it gets to people and the amount you have to pay for certain things. And stockpiling on, you know, core items like rice and stuff is really important, I think. If you can get beans, if you can get them cheap, you know, try to do that, you know, and then limit your expenses, because that's absolutely a must right now. You know, all this technology that they try to put out and, you know, make it important and seem like it's such a important thing to have, you know, it's not going to really help you whenever it comes down to it, and the situation will get a lot worse very rapidly. One of the things I wanted to talk about, what you see happening with this whole presidential selection thing that's going on, and how do you think that's going to affect what we'll eventually see as far as them pushing their new plans? Because we know that they've been wanting to go to war with Iran. We know that out of the people that are running right now, that the McCain campaign is probably the closest to putting us on a ready-made scale to go towards war with pretty much the rest of the Muslim world, even maybe China and Russia, and really get the whole World War thing started on a wide scale. And what do you see happening with all that? Because, I mean, you see them maligning Obama in a lot of campaigns, and I don't understand if he seems like he's bought and paid for. He's given speeches at AIPAC. He says that Israel's security is sacrosanct, but I don't see why they're attacking him so hard, especially recently with this whole, you know, BS about his pastor or reverend. They've been talking a lot about that, and at the same time, Hillary's one of her reverends or priests or something was caught in a malicious scandal with like a 7-year-old girl, and nobody's actually talked about that. I saw something on that on Wake Up From Your Slumber, so it's just kind of interesting because he's winning right now, and I don't know if they wanted him to get this far or if he's not completely bought and paid for. I mean, he probably is, but maybe they're just afraid that he might rebel when he gets, you know, elected. I'm not really sure what's going on. What's your take on that?
Well, that's a good question because there's a lot of scenarios and a lot of confusion being played out right now that Hillary actually isn't the biggest puppet is Obama, and then there's a lot of people out there saying that Obama's actually... Now, earlier we were talking off the air about how anybody that's ever rise to power, and we brought up Martin Luther King and JFK, and these people have always had to go the dirty road to get to where they're at so they can turn their backs on these people and basically stab them in the back. I mean, that's just how the game is played usually. In order for you to rise to power and be in light, these people won't let you climb that high without being dirty at some point. Now, this could be a situation with, say, Obama, like he was playing their game, and then he got a little too far than they wanted him to. He wanted to lay down a Clinton, and then some people are saying, well, the Clintons aren't really playing on their side either. Now, McCain, I just think there isn't no question about him, that he's just absolutely dirty. The guy's a coward. His dad was a cover-up artist for the USS Liberty. I mean, they have so much dirt.
You got Hagee and that guy, Rod Parsley. They're both totally into getting a... war started, a clash of civilizations thing going with the rest of the Muslim world. So, yeah, he's pretty much...
I mean, let's face it. These three people up here that they call top-tier candidates, in order for them to step on some toes, they're going to have to risk their life. Now, are they going to risk their life for a population of people that don't have a clue what's going on, and the people that do aren't standing up? You know, it's just like this whole thing with the AIPAC trial. We tried to gain support for that. And then all of a sudden, the prosecuting attorney sells out and drops out the case. You know, it's because nobody got behind us. And you got to realize that if we get a leader in there, what's the incentive for any leader to want to stand up for this population of people that aren't standing up for themselves? You know, you got to have a foundation set in order to do that. And, you know, if for some reason Clinton or even Obama or even McCain, any one of these people were ever on the fence to go, okay, I'm not going to be part of this any longer. I'm going to turn my back and do what JFK did.
The thing is, like, they'll take you out even if you don't go, you know, even if you're not a populist, even if you're not working for the people, they'll still take you out. Like, they took out, they go after people that, you know, it doesn't even matter. Like, they took out this guy Spitzer, and he wasn't really a noble guy. I mean, what he was doing wasn't really noble, but he was going after, I think, the Goldman Sachs, and they were like, well... Despite the fact that, you know, he might have been on their side in most cases, he was going after some of them, and so in certain key ways, and they don't want any opposition to what they want. So it doesn't really matter if the guy's, you know, opposing them on one issue or if he's, like, actually going to try to destroy their whole power structure. They're willing to, you know, sacrifice people like that, even if they're on their side, for the most part.
Exactly. So, I mean, we don't really know what's going on with these guys right now, and one of them is going to be in the White House. Now, there's some speculation that they want Obama to get in there, and they're trying to create a lot of fuss right now so that they can stage an assassination of him. And
yeah, this is another thing I was thinking about. I was thinking, like, you know, how convenient it would be for them to do that, because, for instance, if they stage an assassination before he gets elected, you know that that's going to enrage probably the majority of the populace, because I would say the majority of populace play supports him right now, as it seems. And that would enrage a lot of people. It could even get some race riots started, and they love chaos. You know that they've consolidated power in chaos, in chaotic times throughout history. So things like that only work in their favor. So you have to wonder, I mean, even if a guy like Obama wasn't going to oppose them in any way, they have no problem assassinating someone like that because they know what he represents to the people. Because the people certainly think right now that he might be for change or whatever that they believe. And if they just, you know, kill them, they could really get a big, big problem started throughout the whole United States. And that's kind of what they want. They could use that to say, oh, well, you know, all these crazy people are in the city burning cars. Maybe we should just get martial law going, you know, and we don't know what could happen after that.
Yeah, I've tried to play out the martial law scenario tons of time and looking at it and going, you know, how are these people going to successfully do this without...
Well, right now they don't have to because the populace is so ignorant that they really don't have to do it. And why would you even get it going if you can propagandize people through the media and through your lackeys and stuff like that without, you know, getting them to, you know, willingly acquiesce to certain, you know, all these issues that they're doing. So at this point it doesn't seem necessary and it seems like a big burden because this is a huge country and, you know, having checkpoints on all the highways and stuff like that, it's a big project.
And it'll raise a lot more questions with the public, too. They'll be wondering why this happened. They'll be looking into it a little deeper, and then it'll open up some doors to some other topics, too. Now, did you see the recent report that just came out? I believe it came out of the U.S. Congress itself. It was a report on global awareness of anti-Semitism growing.
Yes, I read that.
Now,
well, I mean, they've been doing this for a while. They've been saying it in so many different countries. They're saying it's happening in Britain. They're saying it's happening in Europe. They're saying now, what is it? They're saying that anti-Israelism or all the anti-Israel sentiments are basically the new anti-Semitism, which they're equating any kind of objection against the genocidal and murderous policies of the Israeli government as being opposed to the so-called Jewish people.
Yeah, I also noticed one of the things that was on there, too, is that we'll read the quote here. Denying the Holocaust is a crime in a number of European countries. For instance, Holocaust denial is illegal in Austria, Belgium, Czech Republic, France, Germany, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Poland, so on and so forth. Such conduct cannot be criminalized in the United States. The U.S. Constitution protects freedom of expression, and this is the cue part I think that they left in here, which I thought was a little absurd. Generally, the government may not restrict expression based on its content, regardless of the offensiveness of the underlying message. Now, it was quite cute that they slipped in the generally in there as if to leave their door open, but admitting to the fact that this is one of the last countries that they have control of, that they're trying to pass laws on ideas like the Holocaust, which will eventually morph into anti 9/11 denier ideas too. So, what's your take on that?
Well, they're trying their best. We saw that we're actually making a video. You're making a video on the HR 1955 issue and how it's actually being completely run by this criminal Zionist cabal with Jane Harman, who's a Zionist Jew. She's the one writing this. I think she may have written it, or she's the one promoting it the most, this new law that they want to get passed. And in the video, as we'll eventually be able to show everybody, it's mostly Zionists that are, you know, promoting the idea of, you know, stopping the Internet, especially with the proliferation of images and anti-Israeli and anti-Zionist ideas. And one of the things you'll notice is that they don't care about the people who talk about the New World Order, the Luciferian controllers, these like mystical boogeymen that they have, and anybody who's talking about things like that or talking about them or the elite, they're not really concerned about that. They're concerned about, you know, this very distinctive argument that we're making for the idea that there's very few criminals and that they all belong to is the Zionist community, and that they use Israel as a little safe haven for their crime, and that they don't want that to be exposed because that's like the most important thing. That's like the last line of defense they have, so they can use all this propaganda they've got about it to stop us from saying that. That's what they're opposing with this new legislation they're trying to get passed, and they're using the hate crime idea that, you know, people might get hurt by this, and that there's you know, Muslims who are recruiting people with their propaganda, which is like, you know, why would you be worried about a Muslim who has access to maybe a couple hundred people on the Internet whenever you have access to millions of people on your mainstream media, billions even. So, you know, they're really scared of that issue, and we got to really fight against that really hard and educate people about who it is, because most of the so-called patriot community thinks that they're going to be that their rights are going to be really limited by this, and that they won't be able to talk about the CFR and the Bilderberg Group. But honestly, it doesn't matter, because even if these people were successful in shutting down one of these arms, this octopus, or I guess I should say centipede, it has many, many, many legs and arms, and it can pop out another one at any time. It can regenerate these limbs and make a whole new scenario. They've got every institution on lock. I mean, we're talking about the AEI, you know, the American Enterprise Institute, the Hudson Institute. You've got the Stanford Institute, the RAND Corporation, the Tavistock Institute. So many different, organizations that they've got. You know, PNAC was another one of theirs. They've controlled these organizations. Most of the time they create them. Sometimes they subvert already existing institution. So the point of it is, what our goal is to expose who these people are, what their ideology is, and how they're connected to each other. So when it comes down to it, we can distinguish it, and we won't fall for one of their lackeys. Because they can even have a guy who's opposing them in rhetoric, like a guy like Hitler, who will come up in a time of chaos and pretend to be, a stalwart man of the people and a nationalist and, a guy who's patriotic. But at the same time, he could be run by them, and he might, come in there trying to, propose solutions that we'll think, oh, well, he's right about this thing and that thing. But actually, he's being run by them, and they're willing to use people who are supposedly anti-Zionist or anti-Jew or whatever and use them for their own means. So it's very important to be aware of everything on an individual basis and spread that information as wide as possible.
And let's not forget, too, that the FEMA camps they have set up here don't have swimming pools and brothels and theaters in them like the supposed death camps of Nazi Germany. Another thing in this report, too, which I thought was absolutely funny, because they contradicted themselves in the same sentence, not even the same paragraph, same sentence here, and it was talking about the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. It says, the classic conspiracy myth of the protocols, which asserts that Jews are inherently evil, manipulate world events for their own purposes, and dominate the world. This century-old Tsarist forgery was exposed in 1921 as a fabrication. Now, a forgery means it was a copy of an original document. A fabrication means that it was just a fabricated lie. Now, that right there in itself, it contradicts itself, because was it a forgery?
Yeah, nobody has understands. Like people, a lot of people will say today that, even if it's real, then it doesn't really matter. Some people will say, well, anti-Jewish people made it, and that the conspiracy at the top is not really Jewish. It's like mongrelized, as everybody is involved in it, and the British are involved, the Americans are involved. But these people are in every country. They're in the elite. I mean, in Turkey, they're like 1%, less than 1% of the population, but they run Turkey's government. And that's why when you talk about the ATC, or the Turkish lobby, the American-Turkish Council, those organizations are run by them, and that's why they've got so much power. I mean, you would think, why would Turkey have any power over the United States? It doesn't, because of them, though. And so with the whole protocols calling it a forgery, it's obvious that they didn't try to push the idea that it came from something else, that they're able to limit its effectiveness, and that this is a big lie that hurt the Jewish people, and to make them seem like they're bad people. But you got to read the document yourself, because you look at what world events today. You can't deny that it mirrors what's going on almost perfectly. So then at that point, you're going to have to wonder, like, who wrote it? If somebody wanted to write a book about, or write something against Jews, why wouldn't they just write something against Jews? Why would they pretend to be Jews and then, say what they're going to do in a very, elaborate fashion, and then have everything occur in that same fashion, and then say, oh, that's not, that didn't come from them. So it's obviously that the document came from them. It's never been proved as a fabrication or a forgery, either one. It's, in fact, that every time that people have actually researched it, the only main thing that they had was this 1921 London Times report by a guy named Philip Graves, I think was his name, and he supposedly exposed how this was, fabricated from some other book, or it was stolen from some other book. But when you look at the evidence for that, it's very limited, and just because it got exposed in 1905 doesn't mean they didn't write it. Maybe even 50 years before that.
Yeah, the dialogues in hell between Machiavelli and Mas.
Or something.
Yeah. Now, like I said, yeah, they not only did the court that they had, this big kangaroo court full of Jewish judges in Switzerland, prove or say that it was a forgery. Now, we can just look at that in itself as a forgery of an original document. But not only that, but wasn't it true that the leaders of the Swiss higher court up there revoked that ruling?
Yeah, because they had an appeal. They had an appeal after that that was given, because the order was given that this is a forgery and that it's anti-Semitic or it's anti-Jewish and that it's been made to just malign Jews. And then, so there was an appeal made, and it went to a higher court. And the highest court in Switzerland, I believe, they said no. Nobody proved anything. They said nobody proved anything in the lower court. We disagree with the lower court's decision to call this a forgery, and that they didn't endorse the idea that it was from Jews, because obviously you'd have to have perfect proof of that. But they rejected the notion that it was a forgery. And to this day, these Zionist organizations have applauded about how the court found out that this was a forgery and they admitted it and this and that. But they don't really talk about the higher court that actually rejected that view. And I think it's a very important document for people to read, because they can see what they wrote about what was going on and how well they knew how these things were going to happen, how they, it talks about everything. It talks about attacks on religion. One of the things you'll notice in the, so-called patriot community is anti-religion kind of sentiment, where they think that, religion has been the cause of the, most deaths on the planet.
And the Catholic Church did this, and Islam did that,
Exactly. That all these things are, part of their control mechanism. And I'll agree to an extent that, certain organizations have, certain religions and religious institutions have been subverted and, are now used as part of the plan, and that they've subverted it pretty well. But their whole idea was to get the belief of God out of the minds of the people, to instill science and mathematics in its place. I mean, this is written in their book. I mean, and you look at what's going on, and you look at, Nietzscheism and, the Sigmund Freud and all these other different so-called scientists and so-called psychologists who supposedly knew about the human mind, and they've come with such, disgusting ideas. And so you've seen how all these ideas have affected the minds of the general population. And we've seen a very great decline in moral values throughout the globe. This is due to their thing. I mean, and they've also, in that book, they talked about how they were going to subvert or how they were going to take politicians and leaders of countries and, blackmail them or find some secret that they had and then use that against them. And that way they could operate behind the politician while they, use them as a puppet. And another thing they said was they would have control over media. They have control over the media. Then it says, that they would give people confusing ideas. They would, support one thing and support another. Like when Woodrow Wilson was getting elected, they were supporting his opposition at the time. Although they knew they were going to use him, they spent money on his opposition. Now you have to wonder, why would they do that if they wanted Woodrow Wilson? Well, they like to confuse issues. They like to have backup plans. They like to have, all areas covered. So whenever it comes down to it, nobody can come out of a solution. Then that way they can cause a problem. Then you'll have the reaction. Then it's a solution. The Hegelian dialectic, where they create their own problem and they provide you with a solution. They can even provide you with five different solutions, and all of them are bad. And so that's why whenever we oppose the idea of trying to get justice through a corrupt system of political elections, or actually selections, we're justified in having this opinion on the issue.
Exactly. That's what. Some of the other topics in this report too were very interesting. How people around the world are blaming 9/11 on a Zionist job. And one of the things I found interesting, which I never really looked into, but I always thought in the back of my head, and this report had it in there, is that back in the 70s, we signed a treaty that said we would not use tectonic nuclear weapons, which basically means underwater nuclear weapons between fault lines that create earthquakes. And they said that one of the conspiracy theories that's floating around, and I had never heard of this up until this point, but like I said, I thought this myself already, was that the tsunami that happened, was that back in 2004?
Yeah.
In Indonesia, there's a lot of people floating around saying, oh, it was a U.S.-Israel tectonic nuclear weapon that caused the tsunami. And then, you know, there is evidence that they've had that technology for quite a while, because, like I said, we signed a treaty back in the 70s not to use things like that. And how would you ever prove something that was used like that anyway, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you could probably test the waters in that area to see, because any kind of nuclear device that's used, like a lot of people say that a nuke was used in World Trade Center to demolish the building. But, you know, obviously you'd have to have some remnants and some proof. Like, we do have proof of thermite with Stephen Jones' research, but we don't have any proof of any kind of, the things that would be remnants of a nuclear, you know, bomb attack. So you could probably test the waters there to see if that's the case. I haven't studied the issue, so I don't really have an opinion on it either way. I'm sure it's possible. I'm sure they could do it if they wanted to. I don't know what regional significance or, you know, global significance Indonesia has and what they would be trying to accomplish. I know it's a big-time Muslim state, one of the most heavily populated Muslim, as far as percentage goes, Muslim states. But other than that, I'm not really sure what that would do for them. But it's quite possible. They have all kinds of technologies, and we don't really hear about the technology until they've essentially perfected it to the point where they can use it at any time. And then we hear about it. We see that, you know, they've been able to do this for a long time. So they've been able to keep a lot of those things out of the public eye for quite a while.
Yeah. Now, one more interesting thing in here I found funny, because this report is just... it's hilarious in a lot of the things they try to debunk. But they use known incidences of where Jews were actually putting swastikas on their own thing, kicking over their own graves, and they use that as an excuse that those are incidents of anti-Semitism. And they got this right in the report, and half of these things have already been debunked as Jews themselves creating this anti-Semitic action. And, that's... you know, they have to stir that up.
You can Google this too. I mean, if you don't believe us, there's so many of these incidents where a Jewish individual is painting swastikas on walls. They'll fill their car up with anti-Jewish rhetoric and stuff. You can look this up right now. I mean, you can look up when hate crimes are self-inflicted in Google, and the first thing will pop up is this site called The Great Revolt. WordPress. I'm not really sure who runs it, but this person has done a great job collecting all these various incidents where, you know, in one incident, a teacher, a professor, a respected professor of a university did this, where she, you know, vandalized her car, I believe, and then, you know, tried to say that it was somebody, you know, maybe a Nazi or something that did it, but actually it was her. She was doing it herself. And then there was a Jewish student recently in George Washington University, I believe it was, or something. And she did it on her wall. And she was, the FBI was brought in. I mean, you think if somebody was talking anti-Muslim rhetoric, you think that they would bring in the FBI to research that and see what was going on? But they brought the FBI in to see what was going on. They put in secret cameras in there. Hidden cameras, and then they found out she was doing it to herself. and now they're saying that, you know, they don't want to expose who she is because of, you know, fear of what might happen to her in retaliation for that, which is like they're just protecting the criminal again. So yeah, you type in when hate crimes are self-inflicted in Google, you'll see a very elaborate documented list of, you know, crimes where they did it themselves. And so this stuff keeps going on and on and on. People are going to... there's even one here that says, you know, how to spot an anti-Semitic hate crime hoax. Because it's so widespread that, you know, in any kind of situation where you hear something like that, you have to wonder, because a lot of times these people are so well hidden, nobody even knows who they are. I mean, they've assimilated into society so well that nobody even knows who is and who isn't, you know, Jewish. And so, especially with the women... and there's really no way to tell. So if they, you know, allege some crazy so-called anti-Semitic incident, then you have to wonder what's going on and how, who did it and why did it. I mean, recently there was a bomb maker who was Jewish, and he was doing the swastika thing and, you know, threatening Jewish institutions with terror. And then it turns out he was a Jew. So.
Yeah, real cute. That girl got some egg on her face at that university, though, didn't she?
Yeah, she probably didn't think that they would do all that. She probably, you know, thought maybe they would tell her if they were going to put a hidden camera up. So, you know.
Man, you got to look at this stuff and you got to go, come on, is this, it's not, can this get any more obvious? You know, it's the, these movements and like I said, the 9/11 truth movement's been controlled by these people since day one. And you got all these people that see all these issues going on in the world and still turn a blind eye to who the to who's doing these things. And it's at the point where they couldn't get any more obvious of what they're doing here, and you still got people running around going, oh, the Bush and the New World Order, and just, and it gets really sickening.
Well, those people are being forced to start to say some of the stuff we've been saying. They really have no choice, because there's such a tide of history that's going towards what we're saying that we can't be lying. There's no way. I mean, there's so many different excuses made for this. Some people will say the civilization. I have this guy. I'm not going to put him on blast here, but we keep saying that civilization is the main issue, and that we're fighting civilization. That we're fighting, like, we should be fighting the idea that, you know, we have cities and metropoli, and we have, like, you know, different institutions in a society that, you know, is so-called civilized society, and that maybe we should go back to a tribal existence. And ever since the tribal existence, we've been, you know, oppressed. But there's been governments that have lasted for thousands of years, and you can't last with oppression throughout, you know, the populace for thousands of years. It's not a realistic idea. It's not a realistic concept to believe in. And so there's so many excuses made for this. They're like, well, just because the Jews won it now doesn't mean that, you know, if someone else ran it, it would be any better. But nobody else has ran a global government. Mankind hadn't evolved to a stage where they were able to, you know, be controlled globally. There wasn't such means of communication and travel and, you know, all this new technology that they can use to keep tabs on a population. So such a thing has never even, you know, come across anything. And we know that this group has been coveting a kingdom, a global kingdom, for thousands of years. So this is the only group that we can say this about. You can't find this. And all these other institutions and all these other secret societies and, you know, all these things go back to them. The Lord Alpha, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and all these other groups that are global, they go back to this group. You know, and that's what we keep pointing out. And I think it's not that we have to get rid of the group necessarily itself. We have to get rid of all their institutions, and we got to get rid of their system. Their system is usury.
Hello?
All right, sorry about that. We had an interruption in the line here. Back on again. You're saying that the civilizations in history show that it's the same group, and it always has been.
And they were kicked out of a lot of countries for what they did. I mean, you could say, for instance, that England was bad anyway, and despite the fact that England kicked out, you know, Jews or, you know, if any of these other countries kicked them out, doesn't mean anything because they were oppressive themselves. But, you know, that just flies in the face of the idea. They think, a lot of people say that it's a partnership, that these criminal Ashkenazi bankers and their lackeys and their Khazar, what I call Khazar savages, or, you know, the Khazar subversives that they've had, they're are intermingled with the aristocracy. They're not in a partnership. They control the aristocracy. The Congress of Vienna was specifically made to show the aristocracy of Europe that they are controlled, that they have to submit to the will of the banking families and how the banking structure works, because they finance, you know, entire governments to fight each other, and they can do that. And if one government got out of place, they would just they would assassinate the leaders. And so in the Congress of Vienna, what happened with the Tsar of Russia and the Romanovs was that they didn't submit at that time. They said, no, forget this. They were the only group that they didn't have complete, you know, or they didn't have pretty much overt control over the czars. And so at the time, a guy named Nathan Rothschild said that, you know, that they're going to pay for this, whether or not I'm able to make them pay for it, or whether, you know, a descendant of mine makes them pay for it, they're going to have to pay for it. And in 1914, I believe, sorry, maybe, yeah, right after the World War I, maybe, the Tsar, and they executed his family, and then it got a lot worse. It was already kind of oppressive under the Tsar, because he was a monarch, he was an autocrat, and, you know, he controlled a lot of, you know, the vast territories. But once he got out of power, you know, the the guys, the Bolsheviks that came in were a lot worse. And they killed millions and millions and millions of people. So, you know, there is a difference between these rules of all these different people. Just because, you know, we're not all running naked in the woods, you know, we're not tribal, we're not living in a tribal existence, it doesn't mean we're always being oppressed. And even if there is oppression, there's a varying degrees of oppression. You can have economic oppression where, like in America right now, a lot of people are still living very comfortably. We're not, you know, I wouldn't call, you know, us slaves in that sense, because Africans were enslaved in the Americas, and they were, you know, beaten to death. You know, the pregnant women were hung up, and they had their babies slit out of their stomachs. So, you know, that's not what we're facing right now. And so, you know, the idea that it was all slavery and that, you know, it's been like this throughout history, and that this is just another group that's, you know, taken over, is just ridiculous. And that's one of the things that I fight against, because it's important to recognize and have a clear understanding of what has happened in history, because there have been a lot of oppressive rules, a lot of great empires that have been ruled by, you know, other groups, you know, other than these groups were not in, you know, necessarily in the Roman Empire throughout, maybe, and some other empires that have been, you know, kind of oppressive. But the point of it is that the oppression that we're facing now, the kind of destruction that's going on, and it's growing on a global scale, is from this group, and it's relatively recent. I mean, you know, the allegations that this is connected to the mystery religions, and the mystery religions are oppressing us now. You know, the 4,000, 5,000, 6,000-year-old mystery religions, which is basically just pagan ritual, you can't really make a case for that. And so the point of it is just like all these things are deflect attention away from what we're facing now and how to solve the solution. I mean, if tomorrow all these governments of all these different countries decide to kick out the Zionists and the Ashkenazi bankers and the banking families, their you know, subversives and, you know, all their paid off lackeys and politicians, immediately, or, you know, either execute them, arrest them, whatever they decided to do, you would see an immediate shift in what's going on. That you could you know, get rid of all the problems most of the problems in the global economy within a few short weeks. You could have a redistribution of wealth. You could have organizations set up with all their wealth and all their power and all their control over resources to start ameliorating conditions for the rest of humanity at this time. So, you know, if the solution could be, you know, really quick, if everybody woke up at the same time and all these governments grew some balls and, you know, decided to fight these people. But everybody is scared, and that's why this tiny minority group, who's maybe not even 15,000 people, as far as the very top elite people who run everything, you know, they're controlling, what, 6 billion people. And recently, this is another thing they like to do. They like to have a Jew who's, like, supposedly against them to talk about what's going on. So one of the things that this guy, new guy, called a guy named David Rothpoff or something like that. His last name has R-O-T-H in it, which is kind of scary on some level. He's supposedly, you know, exposing the 6,000 individuals who are the elite, who comprise the elite. And it's like another, you know, supposed good Jews, and it teaches all about, you know, who the leaders are and everything. Makes no sense.
Now, that brings me to a final point here, too, about anti-Zionist Jews. Now, one of the biggest overlooked things about Benjamin Friedman, who was a big-time Zionist Jew, was that he didn't denounce being a Zionist. He denounced being a Jew altogether. And I think that's one of the biggest things overlooked, is that he was still affiliating himself with the Jewish community, but just against Zionism in general, and that's not the case. He completely denounced both sects of that. And what's your take on that, or your opinion on that whole incident there?
Well, you know, if you look at a guy like, who was that chess player?
Bobby Fischer, who also did the
Bobby
same
Fischer.
Thing.
Yeah, Bobby Fischer, yeah. He denounced, not only denounced Judaism, but he was just really, I mean, he was just like, you know, F the Jews, and they did this, and they did that, and, you know, this is what they deserve, and they're the most vicious and vile people. And he was Jewish. I mean, according to their, you know, system of, you know, denoting somebody Jewish there, his mother was Jewish, and she was born Jew, and, you know.
So was his father, yeah.
Yeah, and his father, I think, was too. So the point of it is, he just denounced it like that, and, you know, but in some cases, I think that don't, like, you got a guy like Gilad Atzmon, he's an interesting character. He's he was born, I think, in Israel, but then he left and he's denounced Zionism. And he also, in the sense that he doesn't like being called a Jew, because like he doesn't, I don't think he really follows a religion. And when they don't follow the religion, you know, there's not really that much to denounce in that sense. But he also doesn't like the identity. Like he'll argue against Finkelstein, saying that, you know, Finkelstein always, you know, whenever he talks, he says, you know, as a Jew or as a son of Holocaust survivors, I'm saying this stuff. And he's identifying himself as Jewish to, like, give himself more validity. And what Gilad Asmon has always been saying is that, you know, the idea is that we don't necessarily have to be identified as Jewish. We're all human, you know. And, you know, the idea that if you're connected to the human family, these other distinctions fall off anyway. So, you know, if somebody is absolutely must, you know, they got to follow their religion or that they've been indoctrinated from their point of birth with the Jewish religion, you have to get them to reject all forms of supremacy because their religion has been so corrupted since, you know, its beginnings that it forces people to adopt a supremacist stance on everything. So even the anti-Zionist Jews, there was a anti-Zionist Naturi Karta guy, rabbi, that I saw giving a speech maybe in like the 80s or the 70s, and he was saying the kind of the same stuff, that we're not really going to be involved in any kind of peacemaking process with the Gentile nations, and that when the Gentiles want to come together and, you know, for doing peace, that's not really our objective and stuff. So in that sense, they're pretty much on board with most of the supremacist ideas, and that they're going to have a kingdom, and that, you know, only when the Messiah comes. And basically their point of contention is that the Messiah hasn't come, so why are we building Israel? Now, some of them do seem to have a great moral character, in the sense that they recognize what's going on in Palestine is very oppressive, and that they, you know, side with the Palestinians. And that has to be commended, and that has to be, applauded, because that doesn't occur. It never occurs. I mean, you know, we know that the Palestinian people are suffering, but they're not. Nobody's talking on their behalf. So when they do things like that, we have to get them to. We have to applaud that. But the idea is still that, you know, some of them do retain some of those old Jewish habits and beliefs about, you know, supremacy. The point of it is, though, is that worth, you know, pointing out now, whenever you have people on the on our side, and that's one of the groups that we can actually point to. We can actually say, hey, look at this group. They're actually opposing the Zionist policies, and they're Jewish. So in that sense, it's useful to us for us to have them, and it's maybe important for us to do our best to educate them, because I don't necessarily believe in condemning somebody unless, you know, you're sure that they're aware of what's going on. Because you have to wonder about, if we're so propagandized here, I mean, you have Gentiles who come on and say, you know, don't talk bad about Jews, don't say anything bad about them, they're, you know, this and that, and they died in the Holocaust. So if you have Gentiles doing that, imagine the indoctrination for an actual Jew who's been living through that his whole life. So it's important to bring people along. The idea is to get them, you know, up to speed as soon and as fast as possible and with the most correct information possible. And then if they still choose to adopt their unjustifiable stances, then you have to break any agreements you've got with them, or break any kind of pacts or, unification ideas with them, because obviously we're not going for any kind of supremacy here. So, but it's most important to bring people together as much as possible. So if you can find those kind of communities and reach out to them and let them know that a lot of these things are occurring in their name, outside of just Israel, then I think we can unite on a much greater front and expose the real criminals, the real profiteers, and, you know, the real billionaires who have profited off of, you know, the Third World and everyone else. And you can marginalize them from the community that they like to hide behind, which is the Jewish community.
Very true, man. Very true. Now that's that'll about wrap it up today, man. But like I said, man, we can get your forum going. If we get people to join up there,
everybody should get up on there and just register, because if you don't register, you won't be able to see all the different forums. I've got other forums, but I'd really like to be able to see who's actually on there. I don't like, you know, like those other people spying on us and, you know, watching us and then, you know, not being aware of who they are. So in that sense, just register. Just take a second. You know, you just got an email confirmation, and then just start posting, because you got, I mean, I'm sure that so many people that listen to this got so much information on so many different topics, and you've got a section for almost everything out there that I can think of. one of the things I don't really promote is atheism. But I mean, if you want to get into the religion issue, we can get into that. And I basically created a place where we can start debating issues. So instead of having people just be censored and blocked off because they're so-called subversives or people flying them as COINTEL agents and shit, stuff like that, it's just not real. So we can just debate the issues out and see where the truth lies. And for now, I'm not trying to censor anybody. I want people to see, if somebody comes in there with, false ideas, I want everybody else to be able to see, their tactics and how they're trying to, approach us and how they're trying to convince us to believe certain issues and stuff. And, everybody should join up and just register. And the thing is, we have to do stuff outside of the Internet. The only reason I made this is just for people to connect with each other and help educate each other on issues. Like, I might not know something about a health issue that someone else may have studied. And somebody else that has studied the health issue may have not, studied the Holocaust issue, maybe like I have or some others have. So it's a place where you can combine and unite, spread your own ideas and, learn about other things. And but we still have to do a lot of work outside of the Internet. We have to mobilize outside of the Internet in different places. Like you've got anti-war rallies and stuff like that, print out information, give out information, give out solutions, give out other ideas and what we can do, especially give out names and what's really going on. Because, like, things like even Zionists and words really, like, descriptive words don't necessarily do the justice that an actual list of individuals will. And then you can tell what the kind of ideology the individuals belong to, if they're Zionists or not. But if you have a list of individuals who are involved in the crime, people are, see that there is a truth in your cause. And we do have the truth because we know that most of the people that are involved in this crime are from the Zionist Jewish community. So once we expose that idea and, unite with everybody that's opposed to them and opposed to their ideas, we'll have a much better shot at surviving the upcoming cataclysm which they're trying to foment on humanity.
Why don't you go ahead and give that address out one more time?
Yeah, it's Hanverse.com, Hanverse spelled KHANVERSE.com, and / PHORUM. So it's forum with a PHORUM.
And I also have a link to that at the top of top of my site at prothink.org on the left-hand side. That'll take you directly there. And,
register and immediately contribute so, we can get you involved and, you can be aware of what's going on and you'll be able to get into discussions and stuff. That's what I do with that.
Exactly. Well, I appreciate you having on Converse today. We're definitely going to touch base again and, we still got some catching up to do on some other topics here, but for now we'll sign off and again thanks for having you on. We'll see you on the forum.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you have a great one.
All right, peace.
All right, bye.